Welcome to the Inspirati, presented by Nuvo. I'm Alex Merrill, and for season two, I am thrilled to be teaming up with Canada's authority on the exceptional, Nuvo Magazine, to showcase a collection of international creative luminaries who are sculpting, welding, crafting, and forging a path forward with originality and finesse. We share these intimate conversations to shine a light on risks taken, guts trusted, hunches explored. We share them with the hope that they will ignite something in you. The Inspirati was created for those seeking inspiration and those seeking to inspire. Please enjoy. Stitching together a new kind of vision where pattern meets purpose, JJ Martin and her brand La Double J are combining aesthetics and spirituality to bring expansive joy to the worlds of fashion and home decor. Raised in a busy, outdoorsy, masculine family in California, JJ's eye was drawn from a young age toward beauty, be it found in a Silk Halston shirt on one of her friend's moms or Barbie's dream house. After a stint in fashion advertising and marketing, she moved to Italy for love and eventually became a freelance journalist, writing for publications like Harper's Bazaar and Wallpaper. In 2015, she launched La Double J, originally selling her collection of vintage clothing and jewelry via the format of a shoppable magazine. The brand has now grown to encompass ready-to-wear, accessories, home, bedding, and tableware, and has collaborated with partners from Goop and La Dure to Kuki, the Milanese pasticceria where she for many years sat writing her articles, the only person in Italy, in public, on a laptop. JJ gives eloquent advice not only on how to match patterns in our outfits and on our dinner tables, but also on how to identify and address our behavior patterns in life. In recent years, her devotion to spiritual development has crossed over into her designs, notably in her first boutique, which opened in Milan in the spring of last year, and features paper lotus leaves hanging from the ceiling, mannequins in mudra pose, and a sacred grotto with a pantheon of goddesses. Her perception of the divine feminine serves as an empowered rallying cry for a more balanced world, and her tough love approach to spiritual investigation reminds us that it's all there for us, but we have to manifest it for ourselves. We are entitled to creation, but may need to step back and reassess the way in which we're seeking to create. We recorded this a few months ago when she was gearing up to release a collaborative collection with our season one guest, Hotelier Marie-Louise Show. A further celebration of sisterhood and elation, which launched in May. We discussed degrees of maximalism, spiritual quickenings, elegance under pressure, and what it means to surrender, even if you're kicking and screaming through the process. Please enjoy this conversation with JJ Martin and special guest Pepper, her little dog who showed up in the last minutes of our chat. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You're under a unicorn, I think.
I love my unicorn. Can you see her?
Wow, she's so beautiful. My mom worked on a tapestry of a unicorn in Scotland years ago. And whenever they pop up, I get really excited, especially in that kind of time period.
Well, they have magical, mystical powers, and it's a pretty amazing spirit animal.
Absolutely. Yeah. We met for split seconds in New York and London years ago, and I've always really admired your beautiful energy from afar. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
It's a pleasure. Nice to meet you again.
You're in Milan in your incredible, colorful apartment.
I am. I'm here. Just flew in from London this morning.
Nice.
Had a wonderful weekend celebrating a friend's new yoga studio. In London. Where are you right now?
I'm in Vancouver. I was between LA and New York for many years and then came back to spend some time with family through the pandemic. And so I've been posted up here for a bit. Tell me how this amazing apartment came into your life. I was just reading about it and it's such an incredible oasis.
Serendipitously, I was looking for a new place. I was living in a temporary place that I was not enjoying at all and going around on a lot of different house tours with the various real estate agents who just kept showing me crappy place after crappy place. And I was so insistent. And they were like, no, what you want doesn't exist for your budget. I mean, they just kept telling me this like stream of negativity. And I finally just decided to take things into my own energetic hands, which was actually a really good lesson. I feel like sometimes we need to realize when certain things cannot be farmed out. You know, as my company grows and as I get more and more people around me, you know, my biggest challenge has been like, I need to learn how to delegate, right?
Right.
And then you also need to understand, like, there are certain things that your energetic imprint needs to be on. And finding a home is definitely one of them, because I really believe that homes represent states of consciousness.
Yeah.
And when I was starting my spiritual practice, like over 10 years ago, I was seeing this hypnotist, and every week I was dreaming new dreams about my existing apartment having all of these like new wings and rooms that were much bigger than what I had imagined. And I started really understanding how like the hypnosis was increasing my consciousness, and then the house was increasing, you know, the different rooms that you enter, the different states of awareness. I finally decided to take things into my own hand with this house. And I just started by like walking down the one street in Milan that had always inspired me, that just made me feel so good and uplifted. And I went and interviewed doormen. I went door to door interviewing doormen. You know, they were all like, what are you talking about? Of course, there's nothing available in this house. of course not. And until I finally got to one who was like, oh no, there's nothing here. But my friend just called me and there's a great apartment in the most beautiful street of Milan right around the corner. Go check it out. 2 days later.
Wow. That was right before lockdown too, right?
I think we locked down hardcore in Italy, meaning like you weren't allowed to leave your house.
Yeah.
It was like March 9th and I moved in March 1st.
Was it painted? Because you have such incredible colors in your home.
So that's the one good news, was that I had negotiated that I could paint it before I got in. So that the walls had been painted, the kitchen got put in. But, you know, in Italy, apartments, even if you're renting an apartment, it does not come with lights. It does not come with a kitchen. It does not come with closets. So this is very different. Like Italians move everything out.
Oh,
yeah. I was going, you know, for about a year with like two lamps in the entire house. It was so funny. I feel like in a weird way, it was all so symbolic. The entire process of just like sitting in emptiness, in the void, not being able to do anything. I was in emptiness with my company, feeling helpless with the company, feeling helpless with the apartment. And I was just like, now is the time to really focus on me.
Yeah.
I did a lot of detoxing. I did a lot of spiritual work, and it ended up being a very fruitful, rich time.
Well, it's a bit monastic, I guess, right? To have an apartment with nothing in it.
I kind of feel like the, you know, and I'm a maximalist, but I do feel that maybe my life would be more relaxing if I just lived in a monastery.
If you weren't looking at like print and color all the time, but it brings so much joy.
It does. And I think that's like part of the, that's the, what connects the company to like what I do for my energy practice and my spiritual practice.
Right.
It's uplifting. It's meant to uplift, you know, so that's our objective and that's the goal and that's what we go for. And then you just find yourself sometimes running a company and suddenly you're not being uplifting, you know, because it's like you're dealing with the spreadsheets and the, you know, the person that just quit and you can't find another person. You're just dealing with the, the daily struggle, which I personally find like, that's been like a super challenge for me to like learn how to balance that, how to be the mother to that.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you've been, you've now been in Italy for 20 years or so?
Yeah.
Wow.
I moved 1 month before September 11th.
Oh my gosh.
In 2001.
Okay. Wow. How at this point would you say you're divided between, like, what parts of you feel more Italian and what parts still feel California or American?
I still feel very American, but I feel like I have certain affinities or passions. Like deep down in my bones, I feel very American, but my you know, my taste level, my preferences for certain things have become Italian.
Which is definitely a good thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I hate it when a waiter in America is trying to like rush me out of the restaurant. There's a lot, you know, I'm doing a whole book on this actually right now. We're doing a book for the brand and we're shopping it around to several publishers. And it's all about, you know, my frustration levels the first like 10 years I was in Italy, because, you know, everything was like ass backwards, so slow.
Right.
I mean, medieval in the bureaucracy and and the kind of like complexity and the level of technology was medieval. But then it's like slowly but surely you kind of really, it's almost like being in water a long time and you just get this like osmosis and you start understanding like the Italian rhythm.
Right.
I just love actually the way they gather, the time that they give to things. They give time. They listen. They laugh a lot. Now, not all Italians do that, but I would just say like as a culture, there's a real, you know, the slowness is something that I had to bring to my life, actually. Mm-hmm. It's like helpful to slow down.
Especially coming from New York. I mean, even when I would take trips from New York, I feel like at the beginning of the trip, I'd be like, oh my gosh, we got to go. Like, where's the waiter with the check? And then by the end, I was like, it's fine. We'll be here a while. Like it does. It changes your internal pacing.
Yeah. And once you sort of unbuckle that anxiety, it opens up this level of comfort and playfulness and relaxation where like suddenly the magic can come through. Because I know that like when I get testy and irritated and flinty and like demanding, et cetera, like there's no love shining through at that moment. Like right. You're not gonna, you know, you don't have like that soft open belly. No one is laughing at that time. And so, you know, the Italians, they do a lot of laughing. They're really like fun, funny people.
Yeah.
That's what makes them different than the French.
Yes, completely. I'm a major Italophile as well. I'm like 20 months into learning the language. That's been my COVID hobby and my...
Come va?
Bene, possiamo fare questa intervista in italiano.
Ma che bravo che sei.
Grazie.
Siamo, sei poi, dai.
Yeah, no, it's been my way of traveling and feeling connected to Italy. I'm 20 years behind you, but I'll be there at some point. It definitely, I think culturally, I've never come across a people, like you said, that are more filled with joy and simultaneously so glamorous, but so giving and such incredible hosts. And this, you know, effortless is not really like an adequate word for it. It's just there because there is so much effort, but it's not contrived and it's not about showing off. It's like this really lovely, special, specific kind of warmth.
Yeah. They feel like very authentic with their love, with their feelings and their emotions, which is something that like maybe in America, I don't want to say that Americans are disingenuous. It's just that they're a little more flaky, I guess is the right word. They're social butterflies, you know, they're kind of like, or at least in New York and LA they are, right?
Yeah.
Well, and especially in New York and LA, they're always like looking over the shoulder for like the next better thing. And of course that happens in Italy, but I would say that for the most part, like an Italian is just so excited to talk to you about what they're making and how passionate they are about that. Whether they are making a Ferrari or a, like farfalla pasta.
Well, it's more in the moment, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not as future tripping and what's next and what's around the corner or around this person I'm speaking with.
They're really good at the present moment. That's why I think that, now I don't have any empirical data on this. It's just sort of like what I get from the field. I mean, not that many Italians see therapists, you know, they don't really... Whereas like everyone I know in the big cities around the world, they're all, you know, riddled with anxiety. And, you know, the Italians, they spoil their children big time. But they don't spoil them with gifts. They spoil them with love and leniency. They give them a lot of freedom to express themselves, to take over the dinner party, you know, be the center of attention, let's say. And they're very forgiving with their children. I don't see a lot of Italians punishing their kids.
No. What was your childhood like?
So I grew up in like a super outdoorsy, athletic, competitive family.
Okay.
My dad sold life insurance and then moved into disability insurance. And then my mom, he got sick and died when I was in college. My mom took over his business. But my dad was like really outdoorsy and was always taking us on camping, hunting, fishing trips. And I had two older brothers. So it was quite a male environment.
Yeah.
And my mom had a lot of masculine energy, even though, you know, she loved to dress up, et cetera. But she wasn't like a girl's girl, my mom. You know, she didn't have a lot of emotional depth.
Right.
She wasn't like a nurturing mother. We were a busy family.
Were you interested in fashion, or was your eye being drawn by color? Was it starting then?
I was obsessed with fashion. And there was no reason for me to be, because my mom was not obsessed by fashion.
Right.
There were no like grandmothers around that were, there was no like that amazing figure in my life.
Right.
I was born in 73. So it was like 1978, 79, the Gloria Vanderbilt jeans. You know, I remember my friend's mom in her Gloria Vanderbilt skin tight jeans, strappy stiletto sandals, and like silk charmeuse, like Halston shirt. And I just like,
wow.
Oh my God. What is that? That's so exciting.
What an era to fall in love with fashion too.
Yeah. I mean, I would go in my mom's closet and just kind of like try on all of her clothes all the time. And when I had friends over, we would always like give each other makeovers. I was really obsessed by clothes and fashion from a very young age, but I, you know, it wasn't really nurture. I mean, I had all like my brother's hand-me-downs, including their G.I. Joes. And I remember literally being like age 9, like old. And I was like, I want a Barbie. You know what I mean? And I finally got a Barbie and the Barbie dream house, but I got it at like age 9.
Late.
Like most people have that when they're 4. You know, it's like, really? It's so funny.
Well, whenever it shows up, were you doing anything different with Barbie at that age? Like, I remember like wanting custom clothes and like trying to figure out how to turn them into something personal.
All I did was decorate the house. That's what I find so interesting. Like, I didn't even really like changing her clothes. I wanted to set up the house. Really like important to like set it up properly.
With a unicorn tapestry somewhere, an Italian flag, espresso maker.
Yeah.
What was your school experience like?
So I went in seventh grade, age 12 or 13, I went to an all-girls school in LA that was very academically rigorous. And I was not prepared for it because I had gone to this like scholastically crappy Catholic school for grammar school. And I mean, I was in last place. I was a third generation legacy at this school and they almost didn't let me in because my grades were so bad. And they almost didn't let me into the school.
Okay.
And my mom made this big stink. And like, finally I got let into the school. I was in last place and I worked my ass off. And I like graduated cum laude 7 years later. I am one of those people that always starts in last place. I always start. It's just been the arc of my life that, you know, I was the third child, always having to catch up with the older brothers. I was literally last place at my high school and I graduated with top honors.
Right.
You know, when I moved to Italy, I knew no one. I had the worst job in journalism. Literally, none of the PR people wanted me at any of the shows, et cetera. And then it's like, I built an incredible career. It just always happens that I just start at the very bottom.
Right, right. Which I suppose is like a somewhat creative place potentially, because you're not just taking every opportunity that comes across your path. You're actually in a state of building and visualizing what you want.
It is. You know, I think that when we get things that repeat in our lives, we have to start thinking, what is the lesson here that I'm not learning? Because the only reason that the pattern is repeating is because you haven't learned the lesson. So for me, starting at the very bottom, this became a lesson in trust and relaxing. Because I would tense up and get so nervous and like, overachieve and just go, go, go and never stop and never check in.
Yeah.
I didn't allow the kind of magic dark to unfold. It was like, I was so scared of the emptiness and I wasn't trusting my own ability.
Right. Isn't it fascinating how much we have to learn? Really? You're like, I haven't learned this yet. I've been in last place my whole life. I'm ready. I've learned the lesson. Thanks.
Yeah. You know, some days I find it fascinating and other days I'm like, can we just hurry up and get to the next lifetime?
So wait, did you go directly from California to New York?
Yeah. So after high school, I went to college in Northern California at Berkeley. In high school, mm-hmm. We wore uniforms. So we had saddle shoes and like pastel dresses. It was really funny. And then when I got up to Berkeley, and I was a competitive gymnast. And so I was I was ambitious and rigorous and like in a very tight schedule and really hard on myself. Mm. And so I got to college, I sort of like went crazy and gained 15 pounds in 15 days. But that's where sort of like, you know, I joined a sorority. It was a very girly moment for me.
Barbie's dream house.
It was Barbie's dream house. We lived like the first year I lived in a house called the White House because it was painted white. And it was a boarding house before I moved into the sorority. Yeah, it was Barbie. It was Barbie's dream house with all the girls, Skipper and everybody.
What were you studying?
I was a rhetoric major because I thought that I wanted to be a lawyer.
Okay.
And then I took a couple pre-law classes and I was like, this is the most boring stuff I've ever heard in my life. But the rhetoric major really helped me because it's all about argumentative reading, writing, and speaking.
Mm-hmm. Which helps you in everything, especially journalism.
Yeah, I became a journalist afterwards. So it was kind of like the art of argument. Right. You know?
Right. But you were doing advertising first?
Yeah, yeah. I started at this really creative ad agency in San Francisco called Hal Reiney. And then I moved to one called Kirschenbaum Bonded Partners in New York. And this was like in the late 90s when these ad agencies were like the epicenters of cool.
Right. With budgets.
Oh my God. They had such budgets. And it was like, there were no tech companies at that time.
Right.
And there were no fashion companies in California. It was like, if you were creative, you worked at an ad agency or a graphic design studio or something like that. But I never really thought of myself as creative. I was on the account side. I just knew I loved creative people and being in a creative environment. And then when I was in New York, we got the Tommy Hilfiger account. It was very exciting.
In the 90s.
In the 90s. And, you know, I was working on that as the account director. And then after that, I got a job at Calvin Klein in their marketing department, which again was not a creative job. It was the least creative job I have ever had. but I certainly learned a lot. I just didn't really fit in there. I mean, I was wearing like crazy clothes. You know, I had discovered the vintage flea market in Chelsea and everyone else was in their like, you know, tailored black suits.
90s Calvin.
Yeah, I was wearing like crazy florals.
Wow. And then how did you end up in Italy?
So I met an Italian guy at a party one night in New York. And we long distance dated for almost a year. And then I moved to Italy for him. Like I quit Calvin. I hadn't found a job yet in Italy. Because, you know, at that time, the Italians didn't do anything remotely. I couldn't even like get a phone call with anybody. It was funny. I finally just moved. And as I was looking for a job, I did really intense Italian classes all day. No, I had three teachers per day and it was all one-on-one. So I had one for 2 hours, then a break, then another for 2 hours, then a break, then another for 2 hours. So I was doing 6 hours of one-on-one Italian.
Oh my gosh. How long were you doing that?
3 months. And then I could speak. Literally.
Yeah, I bet. I bet you could.
Yeah. My boyfriend was not speaking to me in Italian. You know, he spoke English perfectly. So, you know, the old adage that you're going to learn.
University of the pillow or whatever it is.
Exactly. That was not happening.
Right.
Italy's a remarkable place. Milan has changed a lot. When I moved 20 years ago, it was a little bit more sleepy of a town.
Okay. And now it's kind of, it's the hive.
Yeah. And I think that it, you know, part of that has to do with the fact that Rome kind of collapsed spectacularly just because of the politics there and the corruption and, you know, can't get your trash taken out. Like, you know, nobody wanted to sort of live there anymore.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of mind-boggling bureaucracy there.
The infrastructure issues are insane. I love Rome as a city. And as soon as I'm there for more than a week, I'm like, I don't understand how anything actually happens here.
Right?
And then I'm like, oh, wait, it just doesn't.
It just doesn't. Or you just like don't care.
Yeah.
And then you're fine.
Yeah. And the transit's always on strike. And like, it's just such a mess. It's such a beautiful mess.
Yeah. Every cliche from every movie is there. And Milan is less like that.
Yeah.
You still have like the Italian flavor of everything. And I think that Brexit is causing a lot of people to move to Italy. I think the Expo, which happened the year that I launched Double J in 2015, it just gave like a kick to the city.
Yeah. Was it scary moving there without a career or setup or anything that you felt was yours?
Well, you know what's really weird? That decision to move to Italy felt completely neutral in my body.
Mm.
I did not have anxiety, tension, or butterflies about it. And now that I look back on it and I'm more aware of these things,
yeah,
I find that when I'm making the right decision about something, there's never tension in the body about it.
Mm-hmm.
So like I don't agonize over something when it's aligned. And so I really felt that like moving to Italy was the absolute best thing for me and the right thing for me. Then once I got here, the thing that was agonizing for me was that I'd worked for, you know, I was 28. So it's not like I was, you know, had this huge career, but like still I was a marketing director at Calvin Klein and, you know, I had no identity. I had no friends. I didn't know anyone. That is hard to deal with.
For sure. And it's so funny. That always kind of happens when you enter a new city that way, where you think you have all of this stuff that you're pulling with you. And then suddenly, I guess you're starting back at the back.
Well, I think it strips you down to your core belongings, which are self-esteem,
yeah,
self-respect, hope, faith, trust, you know, love, all of these things. It's like, it will show you if any of those are sort of out of whack.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, if any of that's out of alignment. So you were doing your Italian immersion. And then what was the job search like in Milan at that time?
I mean, I was, you know, just sending letters. There was no, I had email, but none of the Italians did. I mean, it was really weird. You know, no one had a smartphone.
Right. There's no LinkedIn. You're not like, who's hiring?
There's no LinkedIn, nothing. So it was all very much word of mouth. And in the end, I got a temporary job for less than a year with friends of my boyfriend, who then became my husband, who's now my ex-husband and my business partner. So that's
the
trajectory of our relationship. Friends of his had this amazing fashion label called Costume Nationale, and they needed help on their licensed products. They had fragrance and sunglasses. And so at Calvin and marketing, I had done a lot of that. So I helped them. And while I was working there, I went to a random fashion presentation at the Hotel Diana. And I met this journalist there, Godfrey Dini, this hilarious, salty Irish guy who'd had this really big fashion journalism career and was currently the head of the world's first online fashion news service, Fashionwire Daily. And he was looking for somebody and he asked me to like write up the show. So I did. And he was like, great, you're hired. And so I literally started my journalism career like that.
Wow. Had you ever thought of going into writing?
Yeah, you know, I think that I wanted to move, eventually I wanted to work for a magazine. I remember when I was looking at ad agencies in San Francisco, my heart was like, I want to work for 17 Magazine in New York. That sounded very exciting.
Yeah.
And very distant and impossible as well.
And you went on to write for Harper's Bazaar, Wallpaper.
Yeah.
I guess that must have been a pretty incredible crash course in fashion and interiors just from the amount of research you'd have to be doing for articles.
It really was. And
yeah,
you know, and I was on staff at the WSJ magazine for 3 years. I mean, you would not believe their fact checker. I mean, like you would say the guy was handsome and they would want to fact check it, you know? Like it was unbelievable. And yeah, I really got a proper education. I mean, Susie Menkes was like the first one who gave me like a proper published written format journalism job. Mm. And she was at the Herald Tribune and she, you know, she kept asking me to write for her as a contributor. A lot of it was just, you know, you kind of sink or swim and then you just keep going, you keep your light on. And like, if you're good, someone's going to find you. You know what I mean? That's what happens.
Yeah, that's really true.
The trick is like not drowning, because it's really hard when, you know, you're in last place.
You're screaming into the void.
I'm telling you, like I come from a competitive family. I was a competitive gymnast. It's in my brother was a professional beach volleyball player. Like we are all like pretty intense in terms of, you know, ambition. So that was really hard. It was really, really hard. But I learned a lot. I learned a lot from it.
And through that, were you having inklings of wanting to start your own thing?
You know, I never was thinking about doing my own thing. I just got to the point where I had written about every designer in Italy. Mm. And I was now being asked to do my 10th profile on Giorgio Armani.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? This is like boring now. You know what I mean? Like I'm writing the exact same story. I'm not creating something new. At the beginning, it was so exciting. And my husband at the time had an e-commerce company. And he's like, you know, I really think that you could take some of that vintage jewelry that you have and sell it online. So he sort of planted this idea. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm not doing that. He literally like told me that in 2013. And then 2 years later, I launched this website and I still kept my journalism jobs because I was like, you know, petrified of failing. I had a huge collection of vintage clothing and jewels and we shot it all. I had a little freelance team. I put together this online magazine that was shoppable.
So you were writing it too?
Oh my God. I was writing every word.
And how long did that go on before you started making your own pieces?
We actually made the very first dress in the following year, but that year we only made 4 articles of like new product. So
okay,
we didn't really start thinking about it as a new business until the second year, which was 2017. And that's when I like put a little collection together and that's where we did a few homeware pieces and we really started going.
What was the process like for creating prints and has that evolved since starting the line or how did you go about that?
Yeah. So at the beginning, we were using vintage prints exclusively. And at first they were just vintage prints that came from a silk archive in Lake Como. And then I was like using vintage prints from my archive. And then as the team grew, we started sourcing a lot more prints from elsewhere. And then we started commissioning artists to like do things for us from scratch. So now we still do some vintage prints, but not nearly as much.
Okay. So it was it reissues or was it dead stock or how did it start?
Everything was on new fabric.
Okay.
The pattern was vintage.
Right. So this was obviously something that was kind of carrying over from your love of vintage. What was your sort of thinking then and now on mixing prints? Do you have like a philosophy around that?
I love to mix prints.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of person that will mix 3 prints on my body for clothing, no problem. And on the table, like 5. But I realize most people are not like that. So with Double J, I always like to say it's about degrees of maximalism. Mm. Like some people might just want an all white table and a printed napkin, or they'll have their whole like bone white china. And then they'll just use printed dessert plates.
Right. Dip a toe in.
Yeah. Or like they might just, they'll wear all black or jeans or all denim and then just have their printed silk blouse.
Right.
And that's it.
Right.
I like to zhuzh it up. The way that I like to mix prints is usually a large scale and a small scale. It's hard to mix, especially if you're doing 3.
You can't do large, large, and large. That's just too much. Mm. And also, it's very hard to do floral, floral, floral.
No.
Like, you need to kind of like mix the scale. You need to mix the space, et cetera. I love mixing geometrics with florals, or like a plaid. A plaid coat looks amazing over a floral dress. And then what you want to do, if you're like changing the dynamics there, you just need to make sure that the color schemes work. There's got to be some sort of like shared communication between the prints in terms of color.
For sure. You started doing home then in 2017 as well?
Maybe I started home in 2018, I think.
Okay.
In any case, I will tell you that when we started home, nobody was doing what we're doing. Now I feel like a lot of people are. So that's great.
I was at your Matches pop-up in London in 2019, and you were incorporating goddesses in all of this beautiful tableware. And it was the first time I really realized that what you were exploring with fashion was really different, and that it was more about spreading joy and igniting inspiration in others than being cool or untouchable. Was that sort of the turning point when you started bringing your spiritual practice into the brand?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was funny because I think that there was always this like underlying current anyway of the brand being joyful, happy, easy, and accessible. Mm-hmm. And then later I kind of realized, like, as I really started getting more and more conscious of my own spiritual practice, I'm like, God, it's kind of funny how those are like the tenets anyway of a spiritual practice and raising your vibration and all this kind of stuff. So it just felt really natural.
Yeah.
But that goddess collection that you're talking about for Matches was the very first thing I ever did that merged the two worlds. And then in 2020, like in March of 2020, when we were in lockdown, it was so funny because my team was like, well, I guess you have to get on Instagram and like talk to everybody because there's like nothing else to do.
I remember that.
And so then I would just like get up and be like, okay, so, you know, here's how to meditate. And this is your spiritual practice and emotional housekeeping. This is what you do.
Yeah.
And we got a really good, great feedback on that. And we had a lot of new creations come out of that. Like then we moved it to Zoom online workshops where we would like host our community and get people together. You know, the hard part is it's like, obviously my team, they were hired to sell products. So it's not like I have a whole team dedicated to the wellness part. So even though we do a lot and we have this shop in Milan and there's the goddess cave and we're activating it, we've got events, we've got all this stuff going on. And I just launched my Spirit Tickle newsletter, you know, and that's happening. It's actually quite, for me, it feels chaotic because it's like a big soup that is not clearly defined. So I'm just going with it.
Yeah.
Going with my lumpy soup.
Perfect. How did your exploration into spirituality begin?
Well, both avenues into it began because I was feeling awful. So my yoga practice began when I was like in the middle of a huge depression. Okay. So then I found yoga, but I wouldn't really call the yoga practice that I was really doing. I mean, at the beginning, the first guy that I found really was quite spiritual, but the majority of the yoga that I did for the next 10, 15 years was like super athletic and it wasn't very spiritual.
Right.
And then after like a 5-year uphill battle trying to get pregnant, I again just hit the wall. I felt awful mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. And then I was like, you know what? I am out of here in terms of Western medicine, the doctors, the men telling me, like, just take this pill. Like, I'm sorry. I was so fed up with it. And that's really when I found, you know, I found my first energy healer, you know, through that. And then she opened up a whole world. And then I got really interested in that and was just doing total deep dive excavations of every type, everything from like human design and the gene keys to, you know, multidimensionality to the divine feminine to Jungian dream analysis to, like, I mean, I literally was like, you name it. I was studying it. I was reading about it. I was taking workshops. I was taking classes. And that has gone on for 8 years. I mean, COVID was like a huge upgrade for me. As they say in spiritual circles, a spiritual quickening.
Yes, I bet. Were you finding resources in Italy or was this mostly just reaching out everywhere?
I was finding resources in Australia, Bali, London, Italy, New York, Mount Shasta, Sedona, California, I mean, Los Angeles, everywhere. Everywhere I would go, they would just pop out.
Yeah.
It's like the minute you start asking for this and calling it, they come. Mm-hmm. Funny, I get all these, you know, people who are kind of, I don't want to use the word, this word to be misconstrued, but they whine a little bit like, oh, I need this person. There's no one in my area that does this. It's like, you know, you got to manifest this shit for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's the patriarchal mindset that there's like someone above you and like who knows more than you.
Who has to give you permission.
Yeah. Or that like you can't do it on your own. This is about like you taking this into your own hands and sitting down with yourself and showing the fuck up and being like, I am here. I want more. I command it. Mm-hmm. And like the next day, your car might get towed. And guess what? That's part of the process.
Absolutely.
Like you want more and your car being towed is like, now you have to learn patience or now you have to learn like anger control or whatever it is. You know what I mean?
Elegance under pressure.
Under pressure. Exactly. All the things that we need to learn.
Well, that's been a really interesting thing, even just on this podcast, talking to different people, because some people are like, COVID took all this time away from me. And other people are like, COVID gave me this whole other evolution. I wouldn't have leveled up as quickly if I hadn't been put under that much pressure.
Look, that's life. You know, COVID happened to all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, I could have as easily told you about the 5,000 nightmares that happened to me during COVID, because by the way, they did.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I kept saying, I know there's a reason for this. I accept it. I'm not fighting Queen Corona. Mm-hmm. Queen Corona, you're the boss. I respect you. I know what's happening is a massive energetic upgrade for the entire planet. Mm-hmm. However you yourself want to make sense of that is fine with me.
Yeah.
But it's just like, we all have to realize that all of this shit that happens to us is happening for a reason. And you got to open and let yourself be like water and just glide down the riverbank. Otherwise, you are going to be in deep pain, deep suffering.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. You wrote an essay for Goop called A Different Kind of Motherhood about your fertility journey and embracing a creative practice as a form of motherhood rather than confining yourself to the belief that maternal energy can only have one outlet, which is another beautiful example of coming to a new kind of awareness through pain and challenge. Was that something that started kind of connecting you with the women who were buying your clothes? Because I feel like opening yourself up that personally, I sent that article to multiple friends who were having difficulty in their fertility journey and were kind of also, who also were kind of a little bit blocked in their creative outlets and hadn't been approaching everything maternal and approaching themselves as creators from different viewpoints. So that was really helpful for probably more people than you know.
Do you know how crazy this is? You know, I haven't really thought about it until now. The minute that I literally caved to the, okay, universe, you're the boss. Okay, I'd done that like three times in my life. One was Italy. Okay, Italy, I give up. You're the boss. Then my second, okay, universe, you're the boss, was with the fertility.
Yeah.
And the third one was with Corona. And all three times when I did that, I was showered with bounty.
Surrender.
Yeah. But I mean, what does that really mean?
Yeah.
So like we can use these buzzwords.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because there's so many other things in my life that I do not surrender and that I am like an upstanding card-carrying American who demands her rights because I have a right to this and to that and the pursuit of happiness and my freedom. And freedom means I get what I want when I want it because I paid for it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like there's such like a crazy mentality that goes around in our culture.
Yeah.
And so really surrendering is surrendering that. I mean, you're right. The word is, I did surrender, but I went kind of kicking and screaming on the first two, you know, I will admit. The third one, I only kicked and screamed for like the first 3 weeks of COVID. I mean, I was literally kicking and screaming. And then I was like, fuck it. I'm going on a detox.
Yeah.
I'm going to be by myself. I'm going to do chanting every day. I'm going to flow it out of body. It's going to be great. And it was. My company was on a breathalyzer and she survived. I'm just trying to come back and tie this up. Surrender. Yeah. And the female energy. All I'm going to say is that I'm not an expert, but it has happened to me. And it has happened to me in such a massive way. The best things in my life have come from that place of letting go, letting God do its magic. Okay. It's a non-binary source, by the way. Yeah. But by the way, the other part about it is just recognizing like we are God. The God rests in us. That is when you're really connecting to the message. And this is when you can do miraculous things and you can birth what you're meant to be giving birth to. What women don't realize is that like, there's a reason you're not having kids. Okay. Like if it's not happening and you're totally healthy, stop pushing that and go deeper, because I guarantee you it is either you're not being honest with yourself.
Yeah.
You're not being honest with your partner, or you're meant to be doing something else. It totally, like if it's not happening physically, there is an energetic or emotional component to it. And it is always hiding your shadow shit.
Yeah.
This is what drives me nuts. This is why I'm so furious with all those doctors. They were like, you got to go to this doctor. You go to that. No. You got to go inside. You got to get like Dr. JJ on the inside.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do. And, but you know, people don't want to hear that because they're like, I need to fix this problem now.
Mm-hmm.
And their problem is I don't have a kid.
Right.
They've got way bigger problems than that. And they don't want to look at it.
One of which probably being that they're not listening and co-creating with all of the other potential that's being shown to them.
100%.
Yeah. Have you read The Master Key System?
No. Should I?
It was this great book I read at the beginning of the pandemic when I was, you know, my first career as a DJ folded in a day. And I was kind of going back to how do I give myself enough structure that I keep creating through this? And Master Key is really interesting. It was written, I think, around 1916 as like a 24-week correspondence course where every week is a different form of meditation. And it's all about going deeper into your collaborative power with the universe. And it was basically like the book that The Secret kind of watered down and made palatable for everybody. But it kind of got me back into that place of meditating every morning, but with purpose, as opposed to just going in and being like, clear your mind, which I'm always like that. This feels like the beginner step to something else.
I will order it. I'm a big fan of crazy random books.
Me too.
I don't really read novels any. I mean, I'm only reading, and I don't like the word self-help. I mean, maybe it is all self-help.
Well, they're like growth catalysts.
Yeah, it's the growth category.
Yeah, I think we need to rebrand it.
We're going to rebrand it. Yeah, I don't like self-help.
No, I know. It's so tragic. There's like a Sex and the City episode about that.
It's the self-soothing category. I'm really sorry for your podcast, but Pepper just got it.
Aww.
Oh my gosh.
You are a mama.
Oh, I'm a mama to this crazy little rascal.
Oh my God.
She just got in because I was away. And so she just got in.
Cute. All right. We'll be quick. But speaking of babies, you opened your first La Double J store last year in Milan. And she's so gorgeous. How does that feel?
You know what's amazing about that is that the seed was planted by my ex-husband who came to me during COVID, in the middle of COVID. And he's like, we should open a store. And I was like, no, we should not. We definitely should not. We are all overworked, underpaid, overstressed. Sorry for Pepper.
No worries. She's really excited. She's so cute.
Oh, we missed both. We missed you so much.
Special guest.
Special guest Pepper. And her snorting. And then I spent a week sitting with it. And I went back to him and I was like, okay, let's do it. And he could not have been more right, because I never imagined how important it was to make manifest in physical form what it is that we are talking about, doing, showing, and creating the visual. I mean, it's literally embodiment.
Yeah.
Like the term that, you know, we use all the time in spiritual practices, it's like embodying and letting other people make the like retinal connection with it. It has been magnificent.
Yeah.
And I wanted to store, you know, when I was working with my team, I was just like, I don't want this to look like any other store in Milan or in fashion. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't. It doesn't look like anyone else's store. And, you know, we've got like our whole downstairs cave dedicated to the Divine Mother. And we're doing divine DNA activations down there. And we just did a channeling with a incredible spiritual teacher. So we're doing a lot of really cool things. And it's very special to have that store. I never even considered that that would be important because I was like, we're a 21st century brand. We're a digital brand. Like, why do we need a store?
Yeah.
Yeah. We kind of did need a store, actually.
For all the same reasons that you need a home that makes you feel a certain way. It's a state of consciousness, right?
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. How would you describe La Double J now as a fully grown entity with its own store?
I feel like she is kicking, screaming, eight-headed baby who's now in like preteen years, mm-hmm. even though she's 7 years old, but she's like, you know, advanced.
Right.
And I feel like the company is slowly but surely becoming literally its own personality, its own entity, its own. I'm starting to like tap into like what the company wants to be.
Yeah.
Not what I want the company to be. You know, she's a creation. She's a baby. Mm-hmm. So I really like treating her. And actually, that's what I did during Corona. I was like telepathically just tapping into the spirit of the company. And I do that sometimes with the coronavirus as well. I think it's really important, actually. I mean, I know I sound crazy, but it's like, it's the same way I tap into the trees or I tap into the full moon or you work with the sun or you work with off-planet energy. You work with a shaman, whatever. It's just about recognizing the energy, the electromagnetic field that all living things have. And a company is a living thing. Mm-hmm. It's doesn't have a biology, but it's a spirit.
Yeah. And it might take you somewhere that you didn't expect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that your collaborations range from a massive global brand like La Dure to a Milanese pasticceria where you used to get your Wi-Fi when you first moved to town.
Exactly. We are an equal opportunity collaborator.
Peace, love, and panettone.
Panettone.
And now you have a collaboration in the works with Marie Louise, who was on season one. Is this the first time you two have worked together?
No, we have worked together so many times. Marie Louise has been such a cheerleader and supporter of me from the very beginning. We had our very first pop-up shop we ever did at the Hotel Pelicano.
Oh, wow.
In 2016.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was the summer of 2016. And since then, we did another one there. Then in like 2018, we were doing a pop-up at Bergdorf and we invited the Hotel Pelicano to come along and she brought her bartender. We set up the Pelicano bar. We did this great event. She's a sister, you know, she's like someone who really is inspiring and hugely hearted, is the perfect mix between the Italian joy factor and like living la dolce vita, and then the American pragmatic ass-kicking business entrepreneur. It's a pretty remarkable combo.
Dynamite combo, for sure.
You have to come, you know, because we're doing this, we collaborated on a collection together. And then in May 15th to the 20th, we're co-hosting a 5-day kind of like retreat, but like not hardcore, but it's a retreat in which we'll invite people to come and do walking tours with this amazing guy that is a friend of hers that lives in Tuscany. So we'll do walking tours all over Ischia. Then in the mornings, we'll do yoga. I'll lead some meditations
And it'll just be like 5 days in Ischia. You should come.
I'd love to come. I love Mezzatori. That's like one of my favorite places in the world.
It's great.
It's so special. Yeah. So this collection will be the first time, though, that you've really merged worlds.
Yes.
So exciting. I can't wait to see it.
Me too.
Awesome. Well, in addition to this amazing celebration of wellness and sisterhood, what are you most excited about for this year?
I'm going to Egypt in April. And I feel like I've been to Egypt many, many times and I never have. So I feel like it's just a homecoming.
Wow.
It's going to be a homecoming. Yeah.
Wow. That's going to be such an inspiring trip.
Yeah. I'm going with a group of women and it's all like high priestess activation stuff. So I'm excited to learn more and see more and feel more.
Incredible. And then you'll be doing the Mezzatori retreat with all that incredible Egyptian energy.
Hopefully we'll get some good downloads that we can
Brilliant.
Some good transmissions.
Cool. Well, hopefully see you in May then.
I
have an incredible trip. It's so wonderful to finally meet you properly.
Absolutely. And thank you enough.
Of course. Have a lovely dinner with Pepper.
Thank you.
Take care. Ciao.
Ciao, Bella.
And that, beautiful people, concludes another episode of the Inspirati presented by Nuvo. Please rate and leave a comment if you're enjoying these conversations. You can follow the Inspirati and Nuvo Mag on Instagram or find me at alex.merrill. Stay inspired and keep creating.